Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Monday morning, it's 8:50 a.m., and that means it's time for our Monday Reboot segment. That's when I get to speak with Lewis Campbell, who is joining us on a computer link this morning from his office. Good morning, Lewis. Good to see you.
Hey.
There he is.
Oh, there we go. Hey.
Now we can see you. How are you this Monday?
I'm good. How about you?
Doing all right. Thank you very much. Getting ready for the snow maybe to fall here today in and around the Four Corners area. So we'll see just how much we get. But let's talk technology, huh? What's been going on? What have you noticed? I guess the big thing maybe is tomorrow, a big announcement from the U.S. Department of Energy. I don't know if you've seen this yet, that they may have discovered some type of fusion energy, right? They've got the first experiment that's provided more energy than was used to do it.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. That, you know, people have been experimenting with this for a long time.
Yeah,
fusion energy is really difficult. It's actually a lot. People think this is really complicated, but it's not. Fusion, atomic fusion, is when atoms get squished together and release energy. What we're used to is atomic fission, where we split atoms apart to release energy. But fusion is more efficient, it doesn't produce radioactivity. But the problem is, to squish atoms together, you need gravity normally. In nature, fusion happens in stars, where the stars are so big that the gravity squishes the atoms together and produces fusion. Well, you can't take an entire star and put it on the surface of planet Earth, right? You can't take a star and stuff it in a building in New York, right?
Right.
And you need that much mass to be able to create that much gravity. So the challenge has always been, how do we make these atoms squish together and fuse without, you know, taking the entire mass of a star to do it? I'm really interested to see how this works out, if they've been able to, you know, really produce an experiment where they use less energy to squish the atoms together than they get out of the atoms being squished together.
Right. And I guess this reaction is kind of what powers things like stars, right? Like our sun, right? This is why
it powers everything in the universe.
The light and the heat from our sun is this type of reaction, right?
It's fusion.
Yeah.
It is literally, and it is that simple. It's just, you get a star when you put enough matter in one place, a big enough ball of matter in one place, the gravity squishes the atoms so much that they start to squeeze together and they release energy, and voila, you have a star.
Right.
So it's really easy to create a star if you can move that much mass. That's the thing.
Yeah.
All you have to do is put a bunch of mass in one place and boom, you've got a star. But, you know, we can't do that because it's more mass than, much, much, much more mass than even the size of the entire Earth, right?
Right. So this has a lot of, I guess, possibilities, of course, and as you mentioned, scientists and governments and researchers have been working on this for decades, probably since the 50s, I think, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, the idea to be able to say that you could have these mini reactors, I guess, that could provide, you know, almost endless amounts of energy at a really cheap cost is pretty exciting. I hope, you know, we'll see what they say tomorrow. But anyway, this is an announcement from the Department of Energy. We'll see what they say.
Yeah.
Okay. What else?
There's a fun story and there's an important story. So I don't know
all
what
right.
you want first.
Well, let's go with important, and then we'll save the fun for last.
So a little while ago, you've probably heard that a power station in North Carolina was literally attacked, like physically attacked people with guns. It turns out that 8 power stations have been attacked since mid-November with gunfire. And, you know, this is a little close to me because, you know, what I a big part of what I do is cybersecurity, specifically in the electric grid. So I'm very familiar with how these power stations are protected and what the rules are around it. And there are some significant cybersecurity rules imposed on the electric grid, from the U.S. government. It's a standard called NERC-SIP. And they do require a lot of protection around these things, but even without protection, these power stations are getting attacked. And I can't emphasize how important this is. I can't overemphasize how important this is because, if you pick the right power station, just like what happened in North Carolina, you can knock out power to a lot of people.
Yeah, it was something like, what, 40,000 people, I think, were without power because of this attack in North Carolina?
Yes, and
For
then
a long, a while, I mean.
we haven't heard about the other seven attacks because they didn't affect that many customers. But again, it's very possible to do this.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to see a lot of concern, a lot of maybe changing of the rules or strengthening of the rules. Power stations are very remote outlier buildings that don't typically get a lot of human visitation, so they tend to not have the same, there's still a lot of rules around protecting power stations, but they tend not to have the degree of protection that like central control rooms and things like that get. So I think you're going to start seeing some of that change.
Right.
People in the industry have been warning for a while that this is a possibility, right? Power stations are just as important. These remote substations can be just as important as some of the main facilities. So, stay tuned.
Right. Interesting. And I think some of the security was heightened and hardened after 9/11, right? I mean, that was the big kind of the focus on attacks and things like that around power plants and power stations and things like that. But obviously, this shows that they're still, if somebody still wants to cause trouble, they can figure out a way to cause trouble, I suppose.
Right. Well, there was 9/11, and then at around 20, a little a few years after that is when this whole NERC-SIP standard that I just mentioned was enacted by the federal government. And there were a lot of rules around protecting these stations, but still in these remote stations, it's really tough for industry to protect everything. It would be expensive to put cameras and people at every single little power station. So at these remote stations, still the rules only require like fences and barbed wire and locks, physical locks and things like this. But now we'll see that it may be that they're going to have to start putting cameras and physical guards at some of these. We'll have to see how it all fleshes out.
Right. Interesting. Okay. All right. And then we saved the fun thing for last. So what do you got?
So, a U.S. Senator, Ed Markey, just sent a letter to a bunch of car manufacturers saying, "Hey, you need to continue putting AM radios in your cars."
Oh, right.
And a lot of people might say, "Well, nobody listens to AM anymore." But what, you, if you think about it, you'll realize this: there's a lot of important stuff that still goes on AM. These informational announcements and a lot of government-related stuff. When you're traveling through certain national parks and stuff, you have the AM radio you can tune to for information, and there's a lot of emergency stuff that goes on AM radio. So this is starting to shape up as, I wouldn't call it a fight, but as a thing. Like,
Right.
we may have to keep doing it. Car manufacturers are not too keen on this because, in electric vehicles, they're trying to minimize the amount of electricity that the vehicles have to use, and so they've been leaning towards getting rid of AM radio. But we'll see what happens. This senator seems pretty determined to
Right.
preserve AM radio in cars.
Well, there's been a fight a long time of, car manufacturers as we get to the digital dashboard and things like that, and you can connect your phone and your apps and, you can stream music in your car. And I know folks in the radio industry have been very vocal about making sure that radios remain in cars because in places where there's no data or no cell phone connectivity, right? How do you get information? And that's usually over the radio. If you want to know if there's bad weather or road conditions or what have you, the idea has been that you could tune to a radio station or, as you mentioned, at some of the parks and things, tune to a low power transmitter that's broadcasting information all the time and get that information on your car radio if you can't get your cell phone to connect, that kind of thing. But yeah, and I don't think AM radios use much electricity. The issue I think is like the shielding, right? You've got an electric vehicle And we know that when we're driving around, if we listen to AM and we drive under a set of power lines, it gets a little staticky, a little buzzy. And the issue, I think, would be that there's a constant buzz in an electric vehicle unless the components of that AM radio are shielded properly. And I think that's been kind of the issue, is maybe the car manufacturers don't want to do that extra engineering to shield the components so that they don't have static, and that the listener still has a good experience of listening to AM. But it is an issue, and so we'll see what happens. And it's amazing
You're right. You read. I misstated that. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
It's about the shielding and the interference, not about the energy. So
yeah,
my bad.
But that's okay.
But yeah, that's the thing. And it's important. The AM radio stuff is important. You know, I think a lot of these facilities use AM radio. Like you said, it's lower power to transmit. It transmits farther distance wise.
At night, for sure. Right.
Yeah.
And even further than FM, which has been kind of the issue, because I know a lot of AM stations have gotten FM frequencies in their communities. We have that here in Farmington, but the point is that the frequencies don't carry quite as far, and so unless you're right in town, you may not hear those AM broadcasts on FM. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, Lewis, we are out of time, but thank you for joining me this morning. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you. You have a great week, and have a great Christmas and a great New Year's. We'll take about a 3-week break until we talk to you again, so we'll talk to you in January.
All righty. Have a great Christmas and New Year's to you, too.
Thank you very much, Lewis. That's Lewis Campbell. He's with Synergy Computer Systems, and he's with me on Mondays when we get to talk technology right here on KSJE Farmington. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.